This is The Urban Connection, the weekly show on issues that affect the community.
On this week's program, an immigrant from Guyana in her mid-40s went from cleaning houses to a master's degree in a prestigious job. She says if she can do it, you can too.
At age 44, I packed my bag and went back to school. It wasn't easy having a full-time job and a family with school-age children, but I knew what I wanted and I worked towards that.
Then a former NBA basketball player discusses the challenges of finding a purpose after his career suddenly ended.
A lot of athletes, their whole entire lives, they eat, sleep, and breathe their sport. As soon as that person gets done with the sport, their whole identity has been based off of that sport. And that's what's made them. That's who they are. So a lot of people deal with depression after sports because they have trouble with finding their identity.
I'm Leonard Birdsong. The Urban Connection starts right after this.
Now, The Urban Connection continues. Once again, here's Leonard Birdsong.
Our guest today is an immigrant who's made very good things happen to her in the United States. She is a magna cum laude graduate who is originally from Guyana. She says she was a high school failure in her home country, but she came to the United States and at the age of 44 went to college. She graduated in less than 4 years with a bachelor's degree and then went on to get a master's degree. She went from cleaning houses to a prestigious government job. Her name is Fiona Harwood. Hello, Ms. Harwood. How are you today?
I am doing well, Leonard. How are you?
Well, I'm doing really well. It's having a good day here. You've written a book, and that book is called I Did It, and You Can Too. Can you tell our listeners about your progress from Guyana to where you are now? You said that you were a high school failure back there. I don't know if you were a failure, but let's hear some of your story.
Yes, Leonard, thank you very much. Actually, I was one of those students who loved school, but I did not do well. I did a little better, like during coursework, but once it come test time, I did not test properly. So I just kept failing and failing and failing. In order for me to get my first job after school, I had to go to a technical institute where I did a two-year certificate in secretarial science. That's how I got my first job in Guyana. But then when I came to the United States, I realized that that two-year secretarial science certificate was not good enough here. And I applied for so many jobs all over but couldn't find one that I really wanted. So eventually I ended up cleaning homes, and I loved to clean back in Guyana. My mother taught me that, so it wasn't something I wasn't accustomed to. At that time, I realized, though, after a while, that I didn't want to clean homes all the time. I wanted to do something more. And I used to have a friend who always, she had just finished one degree and was going into another, and she would always say to me, Fiona, you need to go back to school. You need to go back to school. I wouldn't listen to her, though. I used to find excuses. I would say things like, I'm too old, or I don't have the time. I'm working full-time. Where do I find time to study? But then eventually I realized that the only way I can get the career I need was to go back to school. So in 2006, at age 44, I packed my bag and went back to school. It wasn't easy having a full-time job and a family with school-age children, but I knew what I wanted and I worked towards that.
All right, you did it and others can too, right? So you not only, you started with, you were in studies for a paralegal, right? You got an associate's degree, and then you went on and got the full BA degree, right?
Actually, I got the bachelor's in paralegal studies. I started with the associate's, then the bachelor's, and then I moved on to the master's in public policy.
I see. And now you are a speaker, you're an author, and you help young women with various things about your life, but let's go back to some more of the things that I know about you. You know, you've said that you had excuses. You couldn't go back. You had children. It would be too hard, blah, 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 that sort of thing. But your friend said something that made you do this, and you did it, and you come out of it, and you have four rules of success. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Actually, what I lived by was that when I clean homes, I learned before that whatever I do, I must do it to the best of my ability. So when I clean homes, I did it to the best of my ability, and I would always get referral by people, and people vouched for my sense of honesty, integrity, and reliability. So that was one thing. Then I learned perseverance. I knew what I wanted, and I persevered. It wasn't easy at all. Even having to be at school, sometimes it's snowing, it's raining, sometimes straight from work. It wasn't easy, but I knew that that would not be the finishing point. That the finishing point, it would be worth it all. So I persevered. And when I talked to people, I would share personal stories about perseverance. And I find that people gravitate more and are motivated when they hear personal stories. And then during that time, I learned that we need, like, mentors. You know, although for a long time I had no particular person in my life to call my mentor, I made sure I was surrounded with support. People who were positive, people I can trust, and who could give me guidance. Whether it be a professor at my college or a supervisor at work, I just surrounded myself with mentors, people who can help me.
How did you go about finding mentors?
Actually, I looked at people who I can trust and people who I felt comfortable with. And that could be in a lot of different areas. It can be even a parent, a teacher, a friend. It must be somebody you feel comfortable with. It must also be somebody who may know a little bit more than you know, so that you can approach that person with certain questions. Because if it's somebody that doesn't know much, you know, sometimes you will not get what you really are looking for.
You got your master's degree, you got your BA, you had the associate's degree. And now, how do you help people, aside from the book that you've written about, I did it, you can too. What do you do with the community? How do you help younger people?
Okay. Actually, right now I have a program in my community as a result of my church where we have young people, some of them, well, they range like from ages five to about 15. We have some 16-year-olds who come in from time to time, and we normally do a lot of different things with them. We would have different workshops encouraging them along various lines. But, like, I would go to schools and talk with students, because even though my book is geared to dropouts, you find that a student just does not wake up one morning and say, I'm not going back to school, I'm going to drop out. No. It takes over a period of time. So those students, they need motivation and they need encouragement. Reminding them, you know, dropping out is not an option. And you need to complete what you've started, and they need help along that line. So for current students, I normally talk with them along that line. For those who I come across who have dropped out, I give them a copy of my book and I speak with them. Quite a few people have testified, you know, as a result of this, I'm doing this or I'm doing that. Have a friend at church who said, as a result, she said, Fiona, I thank you so much for writing that book. As a result, I started back to college. And there are quite a few like that.
So well, that's great. That's great. That really is.
Yeah, thank you.
You gave me a statistic that I didn't know about. You've said every day more than 7,000 students drop out of schools across the United States. Is that true?
Yes, it is. If you look in some educational journals and things like that, I think that statistic came from about 2012 or something like that. But it is true. The dropout statistics, it's an epidemic across the United States. And I don't believe it's in the United States only. Where I come from in Guyana, it's something else also. So these young people, they really need to know that they can do it. And, you know, sometimes a parent may look at them and think that everything is okay, but it's not okay. And when you have people like myself going into these institutions and speaking with these children, you kind of gain a lot from them. You get where they're coming from, and you're able to help them. Some of them, they only need to talk, or they only need to hear you say something and point them in the right direction.
Well, and that's what you're doing, and God bless you for doing it. Well, listen, before we finish, you have told us about some of your four rules of success. The first one was to do things to the best of your ability. And number two is to preserve. And number three is to find mentors. And the final one is something you've been talking about, but we really didn't name it. You talk about give it back or give back. Help someone along the way.
Yes. There are times when we cannot hold everything for ourselves. We need to help somebody. You know, while in school, I realized how serious the dropout epidemic was that plagued the United States. And when I studied for my master's, I chose to study the dropout situation, and I titled my long paper, Stay in School Task Force. Once I was done, I decided to chronicle my life's experience as a means of encouraging someone, letting them know that success is not easy, but it is achievable. And that's as a result of what I'm doing today, going to different places and sharing with not only young people, because remember, I was 44 when I went back to school. There's some parents out there who have stopped going to school, stopped their education prematurely for one reason or other. I am saying it's not too late. You can still do it. Some people have so many big dreams. My husband is one of them, and I am looking forward to the day when he will do what he wants to do where education is concerned.
Fiona, I want to thank you for coming on the Urban Connection, okay?
You are welcome, and thank you for having me.
More of the Urban Connection, straight ahead. Stay tuned. Let's return to the Urban Connection. Once again, here's Leonard Birdsong.
I've got a guest today. His name is Carrick Felix. He's a former NBA basketball player. He was a very good college player. He was a three-time basketball champion, awarded the Pac-12 Scholar Athlete of the Year, and he was also four times a Pac-12 Player of the Week for ESPN. But, however, he's not in basketball anymore. He's retired from it, and he's trying to build his life and help people. I've spoken to you. You are sort of a shy guy. Now, you never told, you know, I know you played NBA basketball, but you never told me that you were the MVP of your high school basketball team when they won the state finals. Was that in Nevada or Arizona?
It was in Phoenix, Arizona. Yeah, it was in Phoenix.
Okay. You were quite a basketball star as a high schooler. You never told me about that, but that got you into eventually playing for Arizona State, the Pac-12, where you did pretty well, right?
Yeah, no. I definitely did pretty well. My story with basketball is it's kind of like the underdog story. I didn't really start actually playing basketball until my freshman year in high school. I was kind of the runt of the group. I was about 5'5" when I started high school, so I was pretty small. And then I was able to kind of balance up my junior year and just become, out of nowhere, growth spurt, 6'5", 6'6". My high school basketball experience was great, and just being able to win a state championship and be one of the first to do it at my school. I mean, it was a great accomplishment. And honestly, it's just the guys I played with, I grew up with. Again, like I said, like you said before, I am a pretty shy guy when it comes to talking about different accolades and things. So,
well, there's nothing wrong with being shy, but I want you to shine your light. Let's talk a little bit about your early life. You told me your father was in the Air Force, so you lived in a number of different places. Where did you live?
I've lived in Texas, lived in Nevada, was born in Nevada, lived in Washington, D.C., lived in Alaska. So I've lived a little bit, you know, all over the country, not for a long period of time. Arizona is probably the one place that I can call home just because I went to high school here and a lot of my friends and family still live here. So being a military kid, it's a little bit different. You have a little bit more of a structured life and growing
and you've
up.
Seen some, and you've it. Seen more of the world than many people do.
Yeah, I definitely have. And that's a blessing, in itself. It was definitely an experience and I'm grateful for it. You know, I get to say my yes sirs, my no ma'ams. And
that's what military kids do. All right. Well, listen, yes. I'll tell the folks that you were drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers after college and you played with them for a while. Did you enjoy college basketball more than the NBA?
You know, I actually enjoyed college more than the NBA, and that's just because of the atmosphere and just how the game was played. But I would say this, I would pick the NBA experience just because just being able to travel everywhere and play in different states and just experience different things, I think that was a plus. But college basketball, I mean, there was nothing like that brotherhood and being able just to have that connection with your team and not kind of think of it as a job. And that's the thing, as you become a pro, a lot of players lose kind of that brotherhood, and a lot of players kind of lose the camaraderie and being able to just enjoy the game because, you know, they're worrying about paying their bills and feeding their families.
I understand that. And what you're saying is, I think you originally told me that you did love college, but you learned so much more about the world when you went into the NBA. Is that right?
Yes. I learned so much more about the world and just about myself in general. It's a blessing to be in the NBA because, you know, you get a chance to see and just be a professional. Just in general, it doesn't really have to be basketball, but it's a blessing because you get to see so many different things and meet so many, you know, different people. That part of it is a luxury. It's a blessing. And that's some of the stuff that you can't take for granted.
Let me ask you about this. I've seen some of the things you want to talk about. And one of them is, why do athletes get depressed during and after their sport? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
This is kind of a big thing that's going around right now. I feel it's going a little bit unnoticed, but you know, a lot of athletes, when you think about it, their whole entire lives, they eat, sleep, and breathe their sport, whether it's basketball, football, swimming, track, tennis, you name it, that's what they're doing 24/7. And what's happening is as soon as that individual or person gets done with the sport, then they're left in the sense of like, all right, well, what's next? Their whole identity has been based off of that sport. And that's what's made them. That's who they are. So a lot of people and a lot of athletes deal with depression after sports because they have trouble with finding their identity, trying to refine that structure within their lives and try to find something worth getting out of bed for, trying to find something that they feel like they're valued at. And I experienced a little bit of this myself when I end up breaking my knee my second year playing in the NBA. It was kind of an eye opener for me because I dealt with the depression and trying to figure out what I was good at, and all I really knew was basketball. But when I kind of took a step back, I had to really get to just to know myself, and I went on this journey of self-discovery. And I think that's, you know, the most important thing for an athlete or just an individual to do, just in general, just to really get a chance to know themselves and know what they like and don't like, and understand that the ball does not define who you are. The ball does not define your character. or your values or what you do. It's just a piece of you. And I think just getting athletes to this to understand that. So,
well, I understand that, and I don't want to malign NBA players. You may have broken the mold, as I understand it. You went back and you finished your bachelor's degree and then got a master's degree. So this was part of your doing things after the professional sport, right?
So I actually got my master's degree when I was in school. So I was one of the lucky ones to finish school and not leave early. I was, I guess you can say, a fifth year senior in school. I did junior college for 2 years before I went to Arizona State. Ended up getting my bachelor's in communications and then my master's in communications as well. So
those degrees in communication have led you to be a public speaker, as I understand it, or helped to do that.
It definitely has. My first intent with the communications degrees were to be a sports broadcaster, but I realized that it was just something I wanted to do because everyone else wanted to kind of be a broadcaster. And it was like the easy road out, the easy way out for me. So as I started to do the self-discovery within myself and really got down to, all right, what am I good at? What do I love to do? What am I passionate about? And what comes natural? And what came natural to me was pretty much giving people motivation, giving them advice, trying to help drive individuals forward to become the best versions of themselves and just having a voice. And I think that's something that some people, you know, they work on their whole lives and they create and have, and they practice every day. And then there's some people that just have that natural born ability to lead. And once they find out that, I think, you know, the sky's the limit. And
so what did you find out about yourself specifically that you can tell us?
I just really enjoyed this watching people have breakthroughs. I really enjoyed giving people this inspiration, but also a lot like helping others just to really open their eyes to what they're capable of. You know, everyone always thinks that, you know, things come easy for people who are successful. And, you know, they look at a LeBron James or they look at Oprah Winfrey and they're like, oh, well, you know, they're successful, I can't do it. But what I truly believe in.
In other words, they're sabotaging themselves.
Exactly. They're self-sabotaging themselves. And what I truly believe is that each of us, you know, we have a story, we have a journey, but it's up to you to really take hold of your state of mind and kind of how you want to live your life. And when you can take hold of that and really try to define and come up with your own personal recipe for success.
So now are you helping young basketball players? Or are you just helping young people, period? Or are you talking to corporate groups or what?
Yeah. So I'm helping all walks of life, whether they're athletes, corporate groups, as you can say right now, the millennials, Generation X, you know, I'm helping all walks of life. You know, I truly believe that no matter who you are, what you do, you always need help, because even I need help sometimes. Like I don't know everything. So just to be a catalyst this in this industry and just trying to positively help people move forward in their lives and get rid of some, you know, bad habits and things like that, I think it's important. So I've been able to, again, like I said, work in the corporate area, work with kids, work with, you know, my generation, which right now is most people would say is pretty bad, but I've been able to work with my generation. So it's been an eye opening kind of time for me just after basketball, just to kind of go through this process.
We've been talking to Carrick Felix, a former NBA player. I wish you all the luck and success in the world. You've got a lot going for you, man. You really do.
Thank you, Leonard, for allowing me to come on and just kind of give you my two cents.
It's my pleasure, my man. My pleasure.
That wraps up this episode of The Irvin Connection with your host, Leonard Birdsong, a production of Syndication Networks of Chicago. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of The Irvin Connection.